Good evening and welcome to Nightlights. This is David Brent Johnson, and I'll be with you for the next hour as we listen to jazz with a Halloween theme, as well as the story of the New Orleans jazz killer. It's Strange Enchantment tonight on Nightlights. Thank you. Bill Evans opening our Halloween edition of Nightlights with Witchcraft, recorded in December of 1959, with a group including Scott LaFaro on bass and Paul Motion on drums, the classic Bill Evans trio, and released on the 1960 Riverside album, Portrait in Jazz. Our next tune for this Halloween program comes from singer Kay Starr, and it originated in a 1949 Disney movie called The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. It was an animated film in which Bing Crosby narrated Washington Irving's story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. The Mr. Toad part of the film was narrated by Basil Rathbone. And in the fall of 1949, Kay Starr recorded the song, backed by the Billy Butterfield Quintet and a vocal group called The Three Beans and a Peep. Here's Kay Starr with The Headless Horseman on Nightlights.
And what goes on when it gets late? Along about midnight, the ghosts and banshees get together for a jamboree. There's ghosts with horns and saucer eyes. Some have fangs about this size. Some short and fat, some tall and thin. And some don't even bother to wear their skin.
I'm telling you, brother, it's a fearful sight just to see what goes on in the night.
When the spooks have a midnight jamboree, they break it up with a fiendish glee.
Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed
is the headless horseman, he's the worst.
When he goes jogging across the land, holding his noggin right in his hand, demons take one look and groan.
Then they hit the road for parts unknown.
Well, there's no rage like a spook that's burned.
The ghost don't like him and he's really burned.
He swears to the longest day he's dead.
Well, I'll show them that I can get ahead.
Do, do, wow, 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 wow.
So close all the windows.
Lock all the doors.
Unless you're careful, why, he'll get yours.
Don't think he'll hesitate a bit, cause you clip your top if this will fit.
He likes them little, he likes them big. Caught him in the middle, or wear a wig.
Black or white or even red.
The headless horseman needs a head.
With a hip, hip, hip and a clippity-clop.
Why, he's out looking for a head to chop. So don't stop to figure out a plan. Cause you can't reason with a headless man.
With a hip, hip, hop and a clippity-clop. Look out!
We know what we're talking about, believe me. You better watch your cues, but take a look at the people who ignored the old good book. Change your ways, you'll find it pays, cause you can't be a haint if you ain't kind of crazed, I guess you'd say. Take our word, we know what we're talking about. You know, this is a pretty spooky thing we're doing here. You don't mind if I turn on another light, do you? Hmm?
Kay Starr with The Headless Horseman from the 1949 Disney movie The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. And it came off a CD on the Jazz Records label called Halloween Stomp, Jazz and Big Band Dance Music for a Haunted House Party. Kay Starr, backed by the Billy Butterfield Quintet and the vocal group that I'm not sure ever went on to much fame of any sort, called The Three Bows and a Peep. Our next couple of numbers are instrumental numbers with titles that sort of evoke Halloween. We'll hear Andrew Hill's Pumpkin, and this from Rahsaan Roland Kirk from his 1971 album Natural Black Inventions, Root Strata. This is Haunted Feelings on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Andrew Hill with his composition Pumpkin from the 1964 Blue Note album Black Fire. Hill on piano there, backed by Joe Henderson on tenor saxophone, Richard Davis on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums. And before that we heard Haunted Feelings by Rahsaan Roland Kirk from his 1971 solo record Natural Black Inventions Root Strata. Halloween is the theme tonight on Nightlights, and next we'll hear from a giant of 1950s and 60s beatnik bohemian and jazz culture, comic Lenny Bruce. We're going to hear his famous Dracula monologue, Enchanted Transylvania, in which the Count is rendered as a road-weary musician. Bruce was friends with jazz drummer Philly Joe Jones, and Jones did his own kind of Lenny Bruce Dracula imitation on his album Blues for Dracula. We'll follow Bruce's monologue with Hell's Bells, which is not the AC/DC song, but rather a 1930s track by Sid Pelton that seems in some ways to uncannily anticipate the 1980s jazz of New York City's Knitting Factory, as well as the minimalism of Steve Reich and Philip Glass. But first, here's Lenny Bruce with Enchanted Transylvania on Nightlights.
All the pictures used to motivate from Transylvania, and Boris Karloff narrates them. Oh, Bela, Bela, do you realize we haven't had a gig in 6 months? I don't know what it is, but we could work the Vegas, the loungers, better than the goofers, you know? I don't know what's coming of the industry, but soon the train will break down and Bela will be walking up looking for lodgings for the night. And we hear the knock on the door and the woman answering. Mm-hmm. Who are you? I've never seen you before. You're a stranger in Transylvania. What is your name? Who are you?
Permit me to intrude my tale. My name is Count Dracula.
Oh, you sound pretty wild. Come in, come in, come in. This town is the squarest. No one's come through here that's been far out for years.
Myself, my family are looking for lodgings for the night. And we don't want to be disturbed. Here's 10 years rent in advance. Leave me alone. That's all. We want the room. Call it. Split. All right. Now I will take my family out of the boxes.
Oh, Papa, Papa, Papa. It's so good to be out of the box. Papa, Papa.
Shut up and drink your blood. Bite Mama good night.
I can't stand to look at you. You,
you.
All right, don't bug me.
Don't give me bug me while the hip talk. Don't be bebopper you.
Get off my back. I'm beat the trip, the bus. We lost the arrangements, everything. You know, leave me alone, will you? One time, leave me alone.
Sure, look at you. Supposed to be fancy then, handsome with the Vaseline on the hair. Dirtying up all the pillowcases. I can't stand to look at you, pimp you. Ech. You're so low.
All right. I'm trying to bring home a little bread. All you want from me, all right, so I don't play jazz. I'm not a swinger. I'm trying. I'm not a bebopper. What do you want from me? I know I've got it. Music business keeps changing. That's what it is. Sure. That Russ Morgan took all my key men. That's what it is. I could only get a good rhythm section.
It is getting light out. I'm getting weak. Excuse me, madam.
Just swells. Now somebody's got a hold of those bells. They're starting to ring, they're starting to sing, and somebody yells, it must be hell's bells.
The New Yorkers, or Sid Pelton and his orchestra, performing Hell's Bells, recorded in February of 1933, Dick Robertson, the vocalist, on that track, which comes again from the Jazz Records CD Halloween Stomp, jazz and big band music for a haunted house party. The bulk of Halloween-related jazz seems to have been recorded in the 1930s and 1940s, and that's the era that this compilation covers. Before that, we heard Lenny Bruce with Enchanted Transylvania from the Fantasy Collection, Howls, Raps, and Roars. We're going to hear another interesting piece from the Jazz Records Halloween Stomp, jazz and big band music for a haunted house party. This is a very early Gil Evans arrangement from March of 1939, for band leader and singer Skinny Ennis, and it's from where we get the title of tonight's Nightlights program. This is Strange Enchantment.
Ooh. Strange enchantment fills the moonlight. There's a breeze like sandalwood and wine. Strange enchantment lies in your eyes. Say please, oh please, tonight be mine. When the moon has gone in the blue dawn, and we go wandering apart, darling, I'll be dreaming of this moment with a strange enchantment in my heart.
Skinny Ennis in 1939 performing Strange Enchantment, the band, the arrangement done by Gil Evans, and Gil Evans also conducting the band there, from the CD Halloween Stomp, Jazz and Big Band Dance Music for a Haunted House Party. You're listening to Halloween music on Nightlights. This is David Brent Johnson. Strange Enchantment is the theme this evening on Nightlights in anticipation of Halloween. And we'll be hearing from Duke Ellington in the second half of the program, his Night Creature suite, the Stalking Monster Movement. And we'll also be hearing from Miles Davis, Sorcerer, the tune that Herbie Hancock wrote for him. Right now we're going to hear something from Julie London, who might not be the first person you would associate with Halloween-related jazz, but this comes from a kind of noirish album she did in the mid-1950s for the Liberty label, one of about 30 albums she did for Liberty between 1955 and 1969. Actually, it was a single that was added to the CD reissue of About the Blues. This is Dark on Nightlights.
O'clock and cold outside and dark, moonless night and such a frightful dark, everything passers-by all wonder why it's dark. Not a sound is heard around the dark. Will it always be this way? And chase away the dark. Passers-by all wonder why it's dark. Not a sound is heard around the dark.
Julie London performing Dark, a single that was added to the Capitol reissue of her album About the Blues, which was recorded in 1956. Next, we're going to hear from Duke Ellington. This comes from an album that he recorded in Sweden in February of 1963. It was an album that featured him with a couple of different large orchestras, and the album was released on the Reprise label as the Symphonic Ellington. This particular number pairs Duke with the Stockholm Symphony Orchestra, and we're going to hear the second part of his Night Creature Suite. We're going to hear the movement called Stalking Monster. This is Nightlights. Thank you.
Thank you.
Duke Ellington with the Stalking Monster movement from his Night Creature Suite, recorded in February of 1963 with the Stockholm Symphony Orchestra and released on the Reprise album, The Symphonic Ellington. We'll have the story of the New Orleans Jazz Killer coming up for you in just a few minutes, but first we're going to hear Herbie Hancock's compositional tribute to Miles Davis, written in the mid-1960s, recorded both by Herbie Hancock for the Blue Note label on his album Speak Like a Child, and also recorded by the Miles Davis Quintet with Hancock on piano for Miles' album Sorcerer. And that's the title of the tune that we're going to hear. Herbie Hancock said that Miles Davis kind of reminded him of a sorcerer, and hence the composition. Here's the Miles Davis Quintet with Sorcerer on Nightlights. Thank you. Miles Davis with Herbie Hancock's composition written for him, Sorcerer, from the Columbia album the same name. Miles Davis on trumpet, Wayne Shorter on tenor saxophone, Ron Carter on bass, Herbie Hancock on piano, and Tony Williams on drums. Well, it's time for the story of the New Orleans Jazz Killer. This is a true story, and it's adapted from Troy Taylor's essay about it. One of the most mysterious and still unsolved frenzies to grip the city of New Orleans came in May of 1918 with the arrival of the enigmatic Axeman, who was this strange and terrifying creature, ghost, ghoul, or something worse. His coming would begin a period of terror in the city that would last for the next year and a half. As darkness fell, the residents of New Orleans would spend each night listening to every sound, looking at every shadow, and would open their newspapers with trembling hands each morning. To this day, the identity of the Axeman remains a mystery. Many believe that he was not a man at all, but a supernatural creature that was able to disappear and appear at will. There are others who believe that he was merely a demented serial killer who hacked off the heads of his victims while they slept. We'll never know for sure. On May 23, 1918, an Italian grocer named Joseph Maggio and his wife were butchered while sleeping in their apartment above the Maggio grocery store. Upon investigation, the police discovered that a panel in the rear door had been chiseled out, providing a way in for the killer. The murder weapon, an axe, was found in the apartment, still coated with the Maggio's blood. Nothing in the house had been stolen. Detectives quickly went to work on the case, and while several suspects were arrested and questioned, all were released for lack of evidence against them. The only clue that was discovered was a message that had been written in chalk near the victim's home. It read, "Mrs. Joseph Maggio will sit up tonight. Just write Mrs. Tony." Investigators began digging into old files, looking for possible cases that matched the Maggio murders, and to their surprise discovered that three murders and a number of attacks against Italian grocers had already taken place in 1911. The murders bore a striking resemblance to the Maggio crime. These earlier crimes had been thought to be a vendetta of terror organized by the mafia. The police and Italian residents of the French Quarter braced themselves for the worst. Almost exactly a month later came a second crime. Louis Bessemer, a grocer who lived behind his store with his common-law wife, was discovered by neighbors one morning lying in a pool of blood. He had been badly injured but was not dead. Beside him was his wife, also injured but amazingly not dead. Both of them had been hacked with an axe. The weapon was also lying next to Bessemer and was also covered with blood. A panel of the kitchen door had been removed, a chisel was lying on the back steps, and nothing had been stolen. Later on that year in August, a woman named Mrs. Edward Schneider awakened in the night to see a tall, phantom-like form standing over her bed. She screamed just as the axe fell. A few minutes later, her neighbors found her unconscious with her head gashed and bloody and several of her teeth knocked out. She recovered from her injuries. A few nights later, an Italian grocer named Joseph Romano was also attacked. This attack was just like the others, although Romano did not survive. He died a few hours later and was never able to provide any clue as to the identity of the Axeman. By this time, hysteria was sweeping through the city. Families divided into watches and stood guard over their relatives as they slept. People went about with loaded shotguns and waited for news of the latest Axeman sightings. On August 11th, a man named Al Duran discovered an axe and a chisel lying outside his rear door in the early morning hours. His back door had been damaged, but it had apparently proved too thick for the killer to cut through. In late August, the rear door of Paul Labella's grocery and residence was chiseled through. No one was home at the time. The same day, another grocer named Joseph LaBouffe reported that an attempt had been made to chisel through his rear door in the night. Awakened by the noise, he had frightened the intruder away. An axe was discovered dropped on his steps. The following day, another axe was found in the yard of A. Recknagel, who was also a grocer, and chisel marks were also found on his back door. On September 15th, a grocer named Paul Durrell found that someone had also attempted to cut through his rear door, but a case of tomatoes that had been resting against the inside panel had foiled the attack. Then, as mysteriously as he had come, the Axeman vanished, at least for a while. In the early morning hours of March 10, 1919, he struck again. Mrs. Charles Cordemaglia, wife of a grocer in Gretna, just across the river from New Orleans, awakened to find her husband struggling with a large man in dark clothing who was armed with an axe. As her husband fell in a bloody heap to the floor, Mrs. Cordemaglia held her two-year-old daughter in her arms and begged her attacker for mercy, at least for the child. But the axe came down anyway, killing the little girl and fracturing the skull of her mother. Following the Cordemaglia murders, New Orleans was again filled with terror. The police stated that they believed all of the crimes to have been committed by the same man, and perhaps they were right. On Friday, March 14, 1919, the editor of the New Orleans Times-Picayune newspaper received a letter from a man who claimed to be the Axeman. The letter appeared as follows, dated Hell, March 13, 1919. Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what your Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of you people who do not jazz it on Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed either in fact or realm of fancy. Signed, the Axeman. Well, some well-armed citizens sent the Axeman invitations to the newspaper, inviting him to visit their homes and saying they'd see who'd be killed first. Most people did their best to follow the Axeman's instructions to the letter. Restaurants and clubs all over town were jammed with revelers. Friends and neighbors gathered in their homes to jazz it up, and midnight found the city alive with activity. All of the city's dance halls were filled to capacity, and professional jazz bands played at hundreds of parties around town. Joseph Davila, a well-known local composer, created the theme song for the night. He titled his composition The Mysterious Axeman's Jazz, and in typical New Orleans fashion, it became a huge hit. When the sun rose the next morning, it was learned that not a single attack had occurred that night. Even though it's doubtful that every home was filled with the sounds of jazz, the Axeman passed the city by, perhaps well satisfied by the celebration that was held in his honor. All was quiet for a while until the night of August 3rd, 1919. In darkest hours, a young girl named Sarah Lawman was attacked with an axe while she slept in her locked and shuttered home. She received a brain concussion, but she recovered. Although the woman did not die, the attack pushed hysteria in the city to new heights. Miss Lawman was not the owner of a grocery store, she was not Italian, and her attacker had not entered through a door panel, but through a window. Was it really the Axeman, though, or an imitator? No one knew for sure. On August 10th, a man named Steve Boca stumbled from his home on Elysian Fields Avenue with axe wounds in his skull. Dripping blood, he managed to make it to his friend's home about half a block away. The police who searched Boca's house found the classic signs of the Axeman, including the chiseled door panel and the bloody axe left lying on the floor. On September 2nd, a local druggist named William Carson fired several shots at an intruder who had broken in his home. And then in October, the Axeman appeared for a final slaughter. A grocer named Mike Pepitone was butchered in his bed during the night. His wife and six children, asleep in the next room, were not touched. The usual clues had been left behind, but the authorities were no closer to learning his identity than they had been in the beginning. But then the horror came to an end. This was the last murder attributed to the Axeman. He was never seen or heard from in New Orleans again. But more than a year after his final appearance, a former New Orleans man named Joseph Mumphrey was shot to death on the Pacific coast. He had been killed by a woman named Esther Albano, who was later discovered to be the widow of the Axeman's last victim, Mike Pepitone. Albano claimed to recognize Mumphrey as the man who was fleeing from her house when she discovered her husband's body. She served only 3 years for the killing. Some curious coincidences were revealed during the police's investigation into Mumphrey's murder. He had once been the leader of a band of blackmailers in New Orleans who had preyed on Italians. He'd also been sent to prison just after the first axe murders in 1911, and in the summer of 1918, he was paroled at the same time the Axeman appeared again. Immediately after the Pepitone murder, Mumphrey had left New Orleans for the coast, and strangely, the Axeman had vanished as well. Was Joseph Mumphrey the Axeman, or were there actually several killers all working together to terrorize the Italian community? Or was the maniac actually what he claimed to be all along, the worst demon that ever existed, either in fact or in the realm of fancy? Thanks for tuning in to Nightlights this evening. We hope you'll join us again next week for our first ever Fun Drive show featuring music from Miles Davis and Eric Dolphy, poetry from Frank O'Hara, and more. Production support for Nightlights comes from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee and Juice Bar. Nightlights is engineered by Michael Paskesh and produced in the studios of WFIU at Indiana University. You can listen to this and other Nightlights programs on the Nightlights page at www.wfiu.indiana.edu. This is David Brent Johnson wishing you good listening for the week ahead.